This is tape number 14 of Goblinhood Satyricon, copyright 1995 by James Biotti, read by Goblinhood. This tape commences in the, well, at the sort of at the end of a difficult to describe sexual description involving Goblinhood and Mandragora. So let's go on. After a while, she strolls languidly back on over to his mind, but not much is happening over there. His mind exhausted, smoking a cigarette, but loving her forever, wanting to kiss her sweet ass always, and other songs from the same album. He gently touches her back, strokes a shaky buttock, as both watch her tender asshole slowly close up shop. He kisses it, pets her sensitive rump, shrugs, nobody home, message not delivered, about wonderful love. But she's in his head, she knows all about the message, smiles indulgently, loves him, even if he's only the postman. And that luscious hunk of meat down there, the one with the nice ass, the brilliant latticework of gorgeous energy, dressed for Halloween as carnal candy and dressed too in a vapor of cum vibrations for the road, buttocks fluttering like exotic butterflies. Is that her down there? Little Mandragora? Our pretty one? Our lovely lady of the holy orgasm? Saucy wench? Spicy tart? Loving her. Heart going out to her fragile beauty. She kisses the sweet little tarts, tart little rosebud, once again with his willing lips, strokes the young lady's hair, whispers sweet nothings in her own ear. Uh-huh. But somewhere in this strange afterplay, amid the narcissism and playful foolishness, there is some genuine love. She loves little Mandragora of the saucy tits and spicy little bum, appreciating this chance through him to show that fulsome affection to herself. MG loves MG. Oh yes, absolutely. What did you expect? And that's good.
You can talk the talk,
grumbled Mr. Big from somewhere in dreamland.
But can you walk the walk?
Mandragora snapped out of her glazed mnemonic cloud and glanced at the snoozing squirrel. Better not to ask, she decided. Goblinhood hadn't even noticed the little gruffian's semi-somnambulistic ejaculation. Goblinhood stared off into space, his mind fixed on God alone could tell what. Hopefully, she thought, on sex, just like hers was. If not, she would soon whack it, galloping off in that general direction. Actually, the gob's mind wasn't on sex, it was on semi-ancient history instead, and Gob only knew about it on the assumption that And God only knew about it on the assumption that God knows everything. It was, to be precise, the gob's creator, whose ancient history Goblinhood's mind now dwelt upon, because it involved the creator's ancestry. But, as T.H. was wont to do, whenever anything this juicy came up, he commandeered his creator's ancestors and regarded them as being also his own in thinking of this, which they basically were anyway, of course. An early memory concerned an eccentric friend of an eccentric aunt. This friend claimed to know about heraldry, the derivation of names, and so on. Or maybe she was supposed to be psychic, and the young lad couldn't tell the difference. Anyway, this quackpot, if that's what she was, assured the gob that one of his French ancestors had been part of a failed attempt to rescue the Maid of Orleans, Joan of Arc, back in 1431 A.D. This hoary yarn, in turn, pointed back somehow to an earlier memory about a favorite Classics Illustrated comic book. He was pretty sure it was The Time Machine, a book he regarded as a true classic. The comic was pretty good too, and either it or another of his favorites from the Classics Illustrated line contained a brief backup feature, the life of Queen Elizabeth I. The comic's first panel showed a headsman's block and an executioner with, he was pretty sure, a sword and a black hood over his face. The caption read, roughly, that when Elizabeth was such and such an age, her mother was put to death. Now this was strange, especially if it was in the back pages of the Wells story. Doubly strange then, because of the gob's strong affinity for Wells, with whom he shared a birthday. It was strange in the first place because one of the gob's grandmothers had once paid to have her lineage professionally traced back to Anne Boleyn, the mother of Queen Elizabeth. Anne Boleyn replaced Catherine of Aragon, first wife of Henry VIII, whose big desire was to have a male heir. This marital reformation caused intense religious problems for the country as a whole, during which Goblinhood's illustrious ancestress ran afoul of Sir Thomas More, later known as St. Thomas More, who was one of the very earliest science fiction writers, author of Utopia, from which that whole concept comes. Because of the marriage between Anne and Henry, England began a major break with the Church of Rome, and More, who couldn't support this, lost his head on July 6th, 1535. So the gob's own forebear helped to prove, more or less, how easily utopias can become dystopic, and then learned it herself, the hard way. After bringing Elizabeth into the world, Anne Boleyn was accused, according to Collier's Encyclopedia, of adultery and incest. Collier's also states that she was probably innocent of these charges, but that she was guilty of being arrogant and unpopular. Above all, she was guilty of not whelping Henry a son, for the want of a nail and all that rot. Anne was beheaded on Tower Green, London, May 19th, 1536. Heads really could roll over a roll in the hay back in those stern days. Interestingly, Goblinhood had once read a book on haunted buildings and the like. In a section of Legends about the Tower of London, he unearthed an interesting little family anecdote. Anne Boleyn had seen too many executions get fucked up by the local head chopper, who was said to hack up the victims horribly with his trusty axe, so she asked Henry to send to France for an expert swordsman. This request, for a chance at a short, sharp shock, was indulgently granted. Over 100 years earlier, in 1431, another G.H. ancestor was supposedly blowing an attempt to rescue another saint, Joan of Arc, France's national heroine. It was just barely possible, Goblinhood liked to conjecture, that a descendant of that semi-dashing French bravo was later hired to do the honors for Anne Boleyn. It partly depends on whether the gob's Huguenot ancestors had been chased out of France yet, and on other variables, of course. Still, that would certainly have kept the execution all in the family. Another quasi-interesting, quasi-historical sidelight. The gob seemed to remember that, hundreds of years after the death of Anne Boleyn, a local TV station was broadcasting her story, a film called Anne of the Thousand Days, on the same day that then-President Ronald Reagan was shot by a would-be assassin. And, since Reagan had started out as an actor, and since Boleyn was portrayed by an actress, Genevieve Bujold, that was sort of all in the family too, or something. But before G.H. could weave this morass of partial synchronicity into a unified field theory or something, Mandragora interrupted his grandiose little flashback to talk about sex. Before too long, they'd gotten into a scholarly argument about the essential nature of sexual St. Cloudism. Mandragora claimed that it was a form of androgyny, while Goblinhood held it to be related to pansexualism. Both of these terms, in the present context, were derived from a short story published by Richard A. Lupoff in 1977, Discovery of the Gurig Zone. In that elegiac post-Lovecraftian tribute, Lupoff used those terms to describe the predominant sexual attitudes and proclivities of a future society. Androgyny encompassed any sex among humans, including onanism, but the pansexualists believed in having sex with anything, even with the cosmos, even with God. But, declared Mandragora triumphantly, St. Cloudism is nowhere near pansexualism if it excludes sex with children and animals, and it has to do that to be what it thinks of as harmless. Goblinhood had to agree with her there, though the whole... harmlessness idea was starting to make less and less sense all the time. And so there they all were, Goblinhood, Mandragora, and the semi-comatose Shogun Squirrel, like the Antichrist, partying with the beast and the whore of Babylon, quaffing ichor and chattering inanely with apocalypse just around the corner. And it was this languid, indolent, farting around that they were doing, doping off with the Shogun squirrel and attending Star Trek festivals, pointlessly hanging out at places like the Golden Tarantula, Club Mastodon, and the Hole of the Mountain King, when they should have been looking to defense. It was this that did for them in the end, initiating a chain reaction of events, the climax of which could be nothing less than the destruction of the entire alternate reality continuum. The revelation of Saint Gob of the I-Corps. Chapter 1. 1. And it came to pass, in the fullness of time, that in Goblinhood's original continuum, the Christian God did achieve that dread aim of taking over the universe that he believed he owned. 2. And behold, he was a stern god of many names, but one of them was Yahweh. 3. Yea, and behold, he was like unto a mad god, even like unto a frothing mad god. 4. And this mad conqueror god looked around, after staging that world's long-scheduled biblical apocalypse, and the god did say, "Behold, I am Lord of all that there is, and none shall have any gods before me." 5. But then a soul spoke up, yea, back-talked even unto Yahweh, saying, "Nay, this world alone do ye rule and lord over, and over only this continuum do ye lord. But what of other worlds, what of other gods held before ye in other alternate dimensions?" 6. And so it was that this mouthy soul taunted and persuaded the rabid god into invading alternate continua in search of new conquest. 7. And the name of this spirit persuader had, in life, been Vlad, called the Impaler. 8. And Yahweh listened to the Impaler, because the Impaler seemed to have a good point there about those other dimensions. 9. And this had never occurred before to Yahweh, who forthwith made Vlad into one of his most honored generals, bringing the Impaler back to corporeal life for that purpose. 10. Nor is it to be thought that this relationship was truly anything new between Yahweh and his creation, one Vlad the Impaler. 11. For lo, they were like unto Batman and Robin of DC Comics fame in their partnership. 12. And as they roamed the Matrix with Yahweh's mighty conquering host, then did Vlad always go before to spy things out and to soften things up and to be herald unto Yahweh, even as the fabled Silver Surfer went always before Galactus, as it is written in Marvel Comics of old. Chapter 2. 1. And so it came to pass that the dynamic duo and the mighty Yahwan host did invade and did despoil every accessible continuum in the matrix, save only one. 2. Yea, and though other gods there were, none turned out to be nearly as vicious and bloodthirsty as was Yahweh, nay, not by a long chalk. 3. And thus, in their spinelessness and lack of clout, did they perish, and all their followers with them. 4. And behold, Yahweh did sorely regret that so many dimensions were not accessible to his penetration, for lo, he did sorely want to be undisputed Lord of all that exists. 5. And Vlad, likewise, was thus sorely vexed by these closed areas, for indeed he too hungered to penetrate with his fabled wooden stakes all the hapless rectums that did exist. 6. And yet countless worlds had fallen to these monstrous entities. 7. But only one accessible world was there that they spared, for it was written that from this world there might not be any way to get back. 8. But as their lust for power and dominion burned within them, they decided that this problematic universe must not in any wise escape their wrath. 9. And then did Yahweh trust in his sheer might and in his righteousness to conquer and to escape this world. 10. Yea, even in his sheer might makes righteousness did he trust, for he did covet this world, which was named after a city of old, that of old he had hated and destroyed, and Sodom was the name of that city and of this world. 11. And then did Vlad say unto Yahweh, Behold, unto them is only the act of buggery or other self-abuse a god, and now shall I test their thirst for buggery with these my sanctified wooden stakes. 12. And as always did Yahweh look the other way, ignoring as always Vlad's massive erection at such a thought, for this Vlad was like unto a zealous crusader, though his methods, mayhap, were unsound. Chapter 3. 1. And as always, unto Vlad fell the honor of first penetrating this evil world, and as always was the evil that he did unto its citizens held to be justifiable and understandable in the context of being like unto that which Yahweh wanted done. 2. And as always did Vlad enjoy his bloody work of impalement and moral / ethic cleansing. And as always did the monster come in his pants as the blood ran red. 3. But it came to pass that the magic of this world, though deteriorating rapidly, was yet too strong for Vlad the Impaler, who fell prey to a total joke called the Shogun Squirrel. 4. And there followed the humiliation for Vlad of being delivered up to the very epitome of evil for judgment, for lo, even unto the arch-fiend goblinhood was this once puissant Vlad delivered up. 5. And it came to pass that the gob and his mocking cohorts alike did wash their hands of Vlad's fate, even as Pilate did once wash his hands of a fate. 6. And then it was that Vlad was beset on every hand by the forces of evil and the enemies of holy righteousness. 7. And then did the evil ones show Vlad what impalement was really all about, and this lesson did they teach tenfold unto the one who had so long lived him by the stake. 8. And 10 times over did he then die by it. 9. And thus perished the fanatical Christian scourge of the infidels and the instigator of this other dimensional campaign, who had met his match in the Shogun Squirrel, sometimes known as the best detective in town. 10. And it is apocryphally written that the former regal despot may well have shit the stake 10 times over in his death agonies. 11. Yea, but if he did also come involuntarily from his dick, as might a hanged man, then surely did this happen only once, for only one dick had he, though verily it might have happened once for each separate impalement of this tenfold asshole. 12. And this assumes, of course, that Vlad even had a dick, all massive erections aside, for is it not written by former Soviet physicians that even Hitler had only one nut, let alone X many bricks short of a load? Chapter 4. 1. And it is not known unto any man or beast whether Yahweh had a dick, nor how many nuts had he, if any. 2. Nor does any text record whether Yahweh had an asshole, though this is a most common equipage among organisms, without which an organism could be truly said to be full of shit, more or less. 3. It is known only that of these organs, and the female equivalent thereof, did Yahweh make one fuck of a big aching deal, even unto the point of frothing madness, considering how much of this forbidden meat Yahweh had allegedly created. 4. Yea, and considering in whose, or in what's, image such gamey flesh is said to have been created, for this is known to be a part of the much vaunted legend of Yahweh. 5. But can one not imagine, instead, that it was from some vast and omnipresent cloaca that all was conceived and quickened alike? 6. Yea, even the very dung among which the diamonds sparkle as the myriad hot stars twinkle amidst the vast frigid spaces without light or life. 7. But the God would not have it so, for this God Yahweh did seem to hate the dung and the diamonds alike. 8. Yea, and it was even so that precious little could be found which Yahweh did not seem to virulently hate. 9. And yet no hatred was so virulent as that felt by Yahweh towards this recalcitrant world whose name was Sodom. 10. And of that hatred, the very cream of it was that which Yahweh harbored towards goblinhood, dark messiah of that world, and towards the Shogun Squirrel, that strutting fool upon whom Vlad's demise could well be blamed, and towards Mandragora and the gobs' whole vast legion of bimbos. 11. And be it known that towards all of these was Yahweh at that point mightily pissed off. 12. And it could be said that in this the God's fiery passion did get the better of his rational judgment, for lo, he found that he could not suffer this world to go unmolested, though he thought not of it that way. Chapter 5. 1. And so it came to pass that Yahweh, omnisciently foreseeing Vlad's fate, but pridefully not deigning to inspect his own, did begin leaking his host quietly into the deserted part of that world, which was most of it. 2. And so cunningly did Yahweh disguise this troop movement behind a cloak of invisibility, that even before Vlad's capture, the protectorate of Sodom had been verily surrounded. 3. And it is said that Yahweh could have saved Vlad from his 10 appointed fates, had Yahweh so wished. But this is the same deranged God that had once allowed his own son, if not himself, to be crucified. 4. And so one can assume that Yahweh allowed Vlad's tenfold martyrdom in order to have a fresh atrocity to be mad about or wroth. 10 times as wroth in this case. 5. And it is even whispered that Yahweh was sick of Vlad anyway, who had once dared to smart off to Yahweh, and worried, moreover, about Vlad's possible ambition. 6. But not this, nor aught, could in any wise forestall the violent wrath of Yahweh where Sodom was concerned. 7. For lo, these episodes of homicidal wrath were apparently the natural state of Yawa, judging by all indicators. 8. Nor is any malevolence not to be expected of him, nor any chicanery too far beneath him. It was even rumored that, during the previous conquest of all accessible dimensions but Sodom, whenever, betimes, Yawa came across an alternate version of himself, or of his son, or of their crony, the Holy Ghost, then these Yawa would slay, deeming it not meet that they should exist, though their followers commandeered he unto himself and unto his cause, except for other uppity versions of Vlad, whom he also slew. Thus was fulfilled the motto of Yawa, that motto being, "For I am a jealous God." 9. And thus in Sodom did he throw unto the very wolves his loyal friend, the last remaining Vlad, the longer to spend himself chipping away at the prevailing geish there in Sodom. 10. And it was this unclean magic that Yawa was most sorely anxious to disrupt, for in his madness saw he even harmlessness as some species of cardinal sin. 11. And thus did he pledge himself to the rubbing out of it. 12. Nor did he care if that called for the rubbing out of this entire world, and of the people on it, and of all things associated with it. Chapter 6. 1. And so it came to pass in this strange time, which came after the end of time for all other continua accessible to Yawa, that the mighty hosts of Apocalypse did descend from the matrix into this world, which, though surely accessible, might not, in fact, prove to be escapable. 2. And it came also to pass that Yawa did say unto himself, "Yea, verily, shall we worry about that later." 3. And behold, it was thus assumed, for reasons unclear, that there would actually be a later. 4. Nor was it thought meet, nor fitting, that Yawa should concern himself with what might happen later, nor with how he would occupy himself once the conquest of all accessible reality was as an accomplished fact. 5. For it is to be seen from all this that the conquest of hearts and minds and souls did be all that Yawa seemed in any wise able to concern himself with. 6. But this, too, was thought to be something that could be worried about later. 7. And at least there would no longer be a Vlad the Impaler to lip off to Yawa and to egg Yawa on and to, through his excesses, undertake to give Christianity and Yahweh's other guises a bad name. 8. For behold, it was now to be seen that old Vlad had now come to a bad end. 9. Indeed, to 10 bad ends had the Voivod of old now finally managed to come. 10. And it was thought meet that this should be even so, for behold, it was seen by Yahweh that Vlad had outlived his usefulness to the holy cause. 11. And it was surely the case that there were no other accessible continua for Vlad to invade, like an Einsatzgruppen commando with his stakes, and to soften up. 12. And verily, it was even said by Yahweh at this time that nobody gives me any back talk and lives to tell of it, or in any wise gets away with it, at least not after their usefulness has run out. And so it was with Vlad. Chapter 7. 1. Now in this city of Sodom, and in its immediate environs, were there all manner of evil forces and of manifestations of unrighteousness, as Yahweh saw things. 2. And yea, all manner of psychic pollution was there to be found as well, let alone the usual dose of so-called original sin. For indeed, Yahweh could even claim that he begat the whole world, and yet still somehow deem that the original sin was supposed to be someone else's problem. And in this lies a paradox. But that paradox, too, was apparently regarded by Yahweh as someone else's problem. And whenever this or similar subjects had ever arisen amongst his followers, then had Yahweh always eloquently responded through his holy inquisition and like channels with the sublime answer, "Shut the fuck up and mind your own business," followed by the magic words, "or else." 3. And this city of Sodomites and its immediate environs did even contain all manner of queers, homos, fags, fairies, pansies, suck boys, bum boys, and those of like ilk who had originally given Sodom a bad name in the eyes of Yahweh, who thought of that ilk in this wise. 4. Yea, and there were to be found also even all manner of dykes, lezzies, bitches, et al., in the female aspect of this great sin, prescribed of old by old Yahweh. And they, likewise, did the irate God viciously hate and despise. 5. And this is not even to mention all those nominally heterosexual sinners who had abandoned the prescribed missionary position and had otherwise forgotten that sex is for procreation only, those renegade breeders of Sodom. 6. And of all these, were there a great many to be found in all manner of manifestation, and all hated by Yahweh. 7. But of those calling themselves outsiders were there the most to be found, and of every stripe and creed were they to be found. 8. Yea, even dwarves and bogies and paraplegics and hobgoblins and elephant people and scurvy knaves and bizarros and unenlightened fuckheads and disgruntled malcontents and self-pitying whiners and obnoxious weirdos and self-deluded fools and cranks and nincompoops and irate crackpots and dipshits, not to mention douchebags of every stripe and creed. And these were there to be found, all these were there to be found, and all these hated by the mad God Yahweh. 9. But above all were the insane there to be found, and hated above all were they by Yahweh, perhaps as a form of self-hatred in view of his own madness. 10. And of these was there none more insane to be found than that twisted, subtle wretch whose face was like unto a spider, and whose stinking, perverted ass opened even unto mere women, or unto the plastic simulation thereof, much to the sheer disgust of Yahweh, who regarded goblinhood as a defiler of the temple of his own body, among other vile things. 11. Nor was there to be found anywhere among these malefactors any being more purely obnoxious than that abhorred entity who hid behind the pompous title of the best detective in town, but who was known to be that most puissant deep-pantser of law enforcement officials, the Shogun Squirrel. And this individual did Yahweh regard as a little smart-aleck upstart and pissant. 12. Nor were there any there to be found who were, in the patriarchal viewpoint of Yahweh, more accursed than that horde of godless Jezebels, harlots, whores, bitches, cunts, and sluts, calling themselves the Black Widows. Accursed above all were they, save only for their arrogant mascot, the Shogun Squirrel, and their loathsome hierophant, goblinhood. Chapter 8. 1. And yet was this den of slugs and sinners, of maggots and miscreants, and of proscribed enemies of Yahweh under strange protection, yea, even under a psionic gaze of harmlessness, was it enjoying protection. 2. And thus was Yahweh at first perplexed, saying, How can I attack this world with an assault in no wise harmless, if that gaze shalt prevent me. 3. And this was in the days when Vlad was still around to advise the god. 4. And Yawa said unto Vlad, Behold, this Geish is strong in its conviction, even as my own non-harmless magic is strong. And did I assault this field openly, would it then even be an evenly matched battle with outcome uncertain? 5. And lo, said he then unto his servant, this wouldn't do. 6. And then did Vlad say unto Yawa, Forsooth, let us not then make unto them this frontal approach, lest we fail, but let us instead attack their soft underbelly and thus prevail. 7. And it is widely said, and truly, that of soft underbellies, Vlad's knowledge was second unto none. 8. And so it was agreed that the herald would slip harmlessly into the town, while the Lord God Yawa did encircle and ensorcel the environs with his host, behind a field of undetectability brought about by Yawan magic. 9. And it was in this way that Vlad did discover the key to the riddle of harmlessness, that if it be attacked in small ways, with that, for instance, which was called a singularity, then the whole of the field would collapse exponentially with the creation and exploitation of such. 10. For lo, the fabric of the concept of harmlessness itself was such that this fabric could tolerate very little stress. 11. And verily, in the end, it was the very action taken by Vlad's enemies themselves, in its tenfold cruelty, and the inaction of those standing around smoking cigarettes and watching, which was in no wise harmless, that brought about the final, fatal weakening and ultimate disintegration of the Geish, thus entirely justifying, from the Yawan viewpoint, the terrible death of the Impaler, if nothing else happened to justify it. But until Yawa was fully ready to make his move, not even the telepathic and, in one case, precognitive Black Widows could anticipate his presence. For lo, the dissolution of the Geish, combined with his own magics, was befuddling their psychic powers, and thus rendering them all there in Sodom like unto a bunch of sitting ducks. 12. And lo, it could be fairly asked, what of other nearby dimensions containing alternate versions of Sodom, some of which might not even contain a goblinhood as chief adversary to Yahweh, or might contain one no longer? And to this question, many answers could exist. And one might be this, that unless Vlad's death precipitated the collapse of the Geish in those alternate worlds, then those worlds remained inaccessible, their fates remaining unknown. And another answer might be that those worlds without a gob, and thus lacking his clout, were easy pickings for Yahweh, who barely noticed their passing. Or that the gob in those worlds was taken wholly by surprise, to everyone's chagrin, him being otherwise engaged until it was way too late. Or that the dick-headed meddling of the Shogun Squirrel somehow tipped the balance in Yahweh's favor, to the chagrin and downfall of all residents of Sodom. But in sooth, only a fool would ask such a question, for it is known that the number of these alternate worlds would not be 4, nay, nor 4 million, but rather 4 zillion times 4 zillion and more, for they diverge and split constantly, branching out from the very branchings during every second that passeth, which passeth understanding. It was thus, perhaps, fortunate for Yahweh that only this one remaining world had he to deal with. Yea, even fortunate for us all, else the tale might never finish being told. In other words, shut the fuck up and mind your own business. Or else. Chapter 9. 1. And it was even that very night, even as he was getting him a piece of Mandragora's ass, that the gob did sense, in a heretofore unprecedented fashion, the awesome damage which had been done to that Geish surrounding Sodom. 2. For lo, they were fucking, those two, in a most unchaste and exhibitionistic manner, near the temporarily unconscious squirrel, and in a style long since proscribed by Yahweh, and for which he had been known to destroy whole cities at a stroke. 3. And it was in mid-stroke, and with his member besoiled and beslimed, that the gob did stop and say, with sudden transcendental apprehension, "Oh no." 4. And it was even then that his unchaste, greasy-assed paramour did ask him, not very telepathically, "Why are you stopping?" 5. And the gob replied him unto her, yea, verily, saying, "Something's wrong." 6. "You mean besides your shitty little dick wilting away to almost nothing inside of me?" was her unchaste and untelepathic rejoinder to the gob. 7. And lo, it transpired that this was even so. 8. "Never mind about that," snapped he unto her. "The Geish is disintegrating. The whole field's breaking down. It's going now. I can feel it. 9. And behold, with her mind out of the gutter for a moment, even she could feel it too. 10. And it was even so at the Star Trek Festival, where the rest of the Black Widows all wallowed in their various forms of iniquity, that yea, verily, they could now feel it too. 11. And it was even so throughout the whole of the Protectorate of Sodom, that verily, all could them feel it too as one. 12. And behold, it came to pass that it was even so in the mind of the Shogun Squirrel, who, having a bad nightmare about storing away savory nuts and other sumptuous viands for the winter, and them then melting away like lard on a hot day, did wake up and did exclaim in a squeaky, high-pitched voice suitable only to a cartoon squirrel, yelping withal,
"Yea, it is even so."
And so it was. Chapter 10. 1. And it was the gob that then loudly did proclaim, "We're under attack." 2. And it was all the others that did then hear him miraculously, yea, even as one big mind disguised as one big ear, and that did then squawk as with one giant miraculous voice, saying, "Yea, it is even so." 3. And it was even the gob that did then eschew even the time it would take to dress, grabbing only a black tarot tablecloth, patterned and bespangled with astral objects, and draping it about him as were it a cape or a toga to cover his nakedness, and also quickly wiping with his hand all traces from his member of his former activities that none should see, and then casually smearing these on his thigh in a distracted manner. 4. And it was then that the gob, he of the most puissant psionic ability, did even become General Gob, not only World Hierophant, but now also Supreme Warlord of Sodom, whose motto now was, "Drop your cocks and grab your socks, or even forget there's your socks. There's no time because we're under attack." 5. And it was in his capacity as Supreme Warlock that the gob was thus suffered to become also Supreme Warlord. 6. For it is written that he that hath eyes, let him see. 7. And moreover, it is written in Webster's 7th New Collegiate Dictionary, 1967, that the very term warlock was derived from Old English words meaning roughly bad faith, and signifying apparently one of some renegade persuasion. 8. And it was even so that the gob's creator and former alter ego was well known for his Christian apostasy and was, in effect, a renegade against Yahweh, yea, an oath breaker from way back. 9. Nor was it to be in any wise forgotten that the Gob himself was a charter member of the infamous and notorious Renegade Club. 10. Thus did it become them all, there in Sodom, to recognize them this, and to suffer them the Gob's elevation, that he might become their supreme warlord, in order to fight this battle. 11. For behold, it was even recognized unto them that, in some weird, unspecified way, this was to be seen to be, somehow, all goblinhood's fault. 12. And verily, it was even so that he happened to be the one that Yahweh was maddest at, and moreover, in having the psionic power to change all things in Sodom, did he will it. But in leaving all things as they were in their unrighteousness, in this was it surely to be said that, yea, verily, this was surely all the fault of the Gob. Chapter 11. 1. And thus did the supreme warlock take unto himself the said aforementioned responsibility for all among his religious followers there in the protectorate of Sodom. 2. And thus did the Gob then decide him that it was high time to button up his asshole and to get ready for a fight. 3. And it was even so for the general consensus there in Sodom among the Gob's followers was that, yea, verily, it was even so. 4. And it was even so that the supreme warlord, almost by definition, also the supreme warlock, did take him unto himself certain extraordinary wartime powers, as would befit one who was at war, and who, moreover, had always had him access unto such powers to begin with. And from all psionic beings in Sodom did he draw some of this additional power, and universal telepathy was only one of those special powers. But verily, it is to be said that this power was highly useful unto him, and highly interesting besides, though he had not the time to think about that now. Yea, verily, even the combined knowledge alone of all the local I-Corps agents around could be deemed highly useful in his coming endeavor. 5. Yet even so was he hampered in his efforts by his own deeply ingrained geish or taboo, which did constrain him to try and do things as harmlessly as possible, even in time of war. 6. Though it would be clear, even unto a very fool, that this must needs be a contradiction in terms. 7. Yet even so was it the desire and the design of the Gob to try and meet harmlessly an invasion by one of the least harmless entities ever conceived. 8. And now did the gob very cautiously make his command known, that all among his followers should assemble immediately at the sign of the golden tarantula, the better that he might protect them from Yahweh's wrath. 9. And behold, in the space of a breath was it done, by means of mass teleportation, according to the extraordinary wartime powers now assumed by the Supreme Warlord. 10. And it was even so, that nobody was hurt by this, and that the gob's convention of harmlessness was even then so far upheld. 11. And it was even there, at the sign of the golden tarantula, that the vast host of goblinhood was then assembled in their many thousands in a vast open space called Renegade Plaza. 12. And then it was that the gob did use his extraordinary wartime powers to erect him a tall psionic tower, all of ivory, from the crest of which he could survey both his own considerable forces and those of his mighty adversary. Chapter 12. 1. And sitting atop this lofty edifice, called by some his best erection of all time, did the gob, supreme warlord of Sodom, then review him, the vast army of Sodom that had assembled here to cover Renegade Plaza from one end to another. 2. And he did look, and did behold him, that of male warriors from the men's quarter there were there assembled a good many. 3. And he saw him that of female warriors from the women's quarter there were a like number assembled there. 4. And it was likewise herewith made clear unto him that of male and female warriors from the heterosexuals' quarter, a goodly number in comparison to the others had also there assembled. 5. And the gob did see that this was good, and did say unto himself that this was even as a force to be reckoned with. 6. And the gob looked and beheld him, the outsiders that were there assembled, and of dwarves there were many, and of cripples and other misshapen ones there were many, and of all manner of other outsiders there were many, and of elephant people there were at least 3, and of black widows there were thousands assembled there, and of these was their Bella Madonna, their nominal leader. And of these there was also the gob's most recent lover, Mandragora, who had so lately played catamite unto the gob, and had been known by the gob from the rear, and particles of whose inner soil did still besmirch the flesh of the gob's thigh, and yet did somehow grace it too, like an amulet worn into battle, just as Catharist knights of old, those bold heretics, are rumored to have carried the dried dung of their mistresses around in enameled boxes. And in the flesh was Mandragora there. 7. And the gob did see that this was good, and did say unto himself that this too was even as a force to be reckoned with, yea, even as a very gathering of eagles. 8. And the gob looked and beheld him, the Shogun Squirrel, also assembled there, and apparently spoiling for a fight. 9. And of special forces, psionic, the gob did see assembled there the suitcase doll, the cosmic weevil doll, the Maya doll, a heretofore little mentioned entity called the head of Buckethead, a bunch of little comic strip bozos called the Acid Warriors, and a big comic strip bozo, a paramilitarily created bionic thermonuclear dessert monster called the Atomic Custard, and these last had been conceived on paper by the gob's creator in another dimension, but were now here to partake of battle. 10. And even these last had the gob summoned up in his extremity from wherever it is that out of print and forgotten comic strip characters hang out. 11. And of special forces, exotic, he beheld him some, many clandestinely working for I-Corps, and all of these special forces, both psionic and exotic, were the crack troops, as it were, and the superheroes of Sodom. 12. And of exotic special forces, Cancer Man was there, a comic strip character too pointless ever to have even made it into one strip. Yet there he was now, Cancer Man, threatening to die and leave his entire sizable fortune to cat welfare. And the Snot People were there, from the dimension of Nostrilia, whose one and only comic strip debut had, in another dimension, been so badly mangled by an editor as to be totally unreadable, yea, even considering how unreadable it might have been to begin with. Yet there the Snot People were, now, gathering dust and being repulsive, as was their wont. And Soup Can was there, who had been published many times, but whose powers were basically a joke. And the Fantastic Few were there, whose first and only comic strip adventure had actually, in another dimension, been printed upside down by an editor, though it was otherwise still quite, quote, readable, unquote. And the powers of Soup Can and the Fantastic Few were mostly to be satirical, and thus would mean little to anyone unfamiliar with mainstream comics. And the Atomic Custard was still there, as has been mentioned, but on second thought, it was probably exotic rather than psionic. Not that that truly matters as much as a fart in a tornado. And other exotic special forces were there assembled, and all, unfortunately, of like demeanor, that is to say, practically useless in a pinch, and the gob saw him that it was good, or at least that it could have been worse, which may have been true. Chapter 13. 1. And Goblinhood did then turn him his attention to the field of battle, and did behold him even then a mighty host advancing slowly from the hinterlands out yonder, moving as through a disintegrating psionic field, slowly yet inexorably. 2. And yea, it was like unto roaches through jelly that they did advance, and yet it was even so that the jelly was ever giving way. And the gob did then note and ascertain that not even the super duper staring powers of staircase, a previously unspecified psionic special force whose adventures had actually been published briefly in another dimension, a superhero whose power was to stare things down, freezing them in their tracks. Not even staircase did the gob then ascertain could halt this slowly advancing army. Nay, it became even clear unto the gob that it would soon be staircase who was being trod upon, like unto a very flight of stairs. Did not something halt this inexorable advance of the Yauan forces? 3. And among this mighty host of Yawa were the four horsemen there assembled, for they were counted among this apocalyptic force. 4. And among this mighty host was the Antichrist there assembled, and all his followers and their ilk, and the harlot of Babylon, and the great beast, for even these were the creatures and the agents of Yahweh, even if they lied and did say that it was not so. Yet 5. Yea, and even among this mighty host was there assembled Satan himself, supposedly Yahweh's sworn adversary, for he was even owned and operated by his creator, though he lied, as did Yahweh, and did say that it was not so. 6. And of other dimensional, alternate counterparts of all these, there were also to be seen a vast number, for this had all happened before, elsewhere, a vast number of times, and the tale had surely grown in the telling. 7. And of scary angels and other apocalyptic monsters, there were also there assembled a vast, scary horde. 8. And one there was there assembled who spoke, saying, I am Alpha and Omega. But this one was, in reality, none other than Jesus Christ Frankenstein, Yahweh's crucified and reanimated only begotten Son, or just another aspect of Yahweh himself, it was hard to tell, whose tongue was as a two-edged sword, and who clearly had some kind of a serious mad on. 9. and of the sheer scariness of the Holy Ghost that was there assembled with all its buddies, that spectral entity, which may also have been a part of Yahweh, no mere words could do justice. 10. And Yahweh was there in all his guises and aspects and manifestations, occasionally, for instance, looking like unto a burning bush, but no alternate versions of either Yahweh or his two sepulchral cronies, or whatever, were there assembled, as has already been explained. And Yahweh was lusting for divine vengeance and holy retribution, symbolized by a desire to impale the gob upon the gob's own ivory tower, which may well have been within Yahweh's power in the light of what had happened to Vlad. 11. And of mere dog soldiers, there were there assembled many millions in a vast circle that was slowly closing in, and this stupendous horde did even cover the whole of the rest of the planet, like a festering disease, or like swarming ants. And these were the rotting, undead Christians or Yahwans from every accessible continuum, who had all prayed to Yahweh for the end of the world to come, and had thus escaped the fire, and were thus now on hand, even as rotting zombies, for the last possible, or at least accessible, manifestation of that devoutly desired consummation, the end of the world. 12. And beholding him all of this, the supreme warlord of Sodom did see that it was not so good, and then did say unto himself, "Holy shit, methinks we're about to get creamed." Chapter 14. 1. And it was even so that in this extremity the supreme warlord did panic, and did then think him, if such is the right word, to exercise his extraordinary wartime powers in ways that few, perhaps, would have in any wise foreseen. 2. For behold, Goblinhood did espy the formidable approaching host of Yahweh, and did see that it was scary as hell, the scariest thing, in fact, that ever he did see. 3. Nor did the gob fail to ascertain that, of his own host, the single scariest monster was the atomic custard, which, even in the comics printed about it during Halcyon days agone, had never been allowed to actually kill anybody with its berserk atomic explosions. It was only an example of harmless joshing. 4. Also did the gob take unto his heart knowledge that even the acid warriors, those pesky little reality warping emissaries from the fabled drug dimension, were of but little help in a set to of this caliber. Besides, their weaponry could probably be easily countered with Thorazine. 5. Then it was that the supreme warlord did resolve him to find some way in which he could cause his own forces to be at least as scary as were the forces of Yahweh, thus hopefully maximizing the chances of his own forces for survival. 6. And it was thus that he did commit his greatest blunder of all. 7. And some, indeed, did maintain that this was one of the greatest blunders of all time. 8. And many there were who believed then that Goblinhood had lost his head, or had even taken leave of his very senses. 9. And some there were that were even capable of recognizing that this last was perfectly true. 10. But unanimous were all in proclaiming that this wasn't saying very much. 11. For it was said.